Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, broadcasting at our new studio high atop Mount Helix. Today we open our show with news about a bill that has just passed the Assembly Judiciary Committee and is heading to the Assembly floor. It would take away consumers' rights to have a landline telephone, and we'll tell you just how that puts lives at risk, especially in rural areas such as many communities in East County. Congressman Duncan Hunter is in the hot seat over some personal expenses charged up to his campaign, and we'll have the latest developments on today's show. San Diego Police Department is seeking public help to solve a horrific crime, the burning of a homeless man over the weekend. Stay tuned for a description of the suspect and his vehicle. And then on Jobs Talk, learn about the new family leave bill just signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown. The County Board of Education has made its decision on the Grossmont Union High School District's controversial redistricting map. We'll tell you about the outcome, including who is weighed in for and against the plan and what happens next on today's show. We'll also have information on a fatal hit-and-run crash in the Campo area, as well as a warning from campus police about a flasher at San Diego State University who is giving library patrons a look at more than just books. A ballot measure to build more fire stations in San Diego has qualified for the ballot, and today we'll have some information for voters in San Diego. Plus, hear from county officials on why you should be taking steps right now to make your property fire-resistant, since fire season will be starting early this year. On the presidential campaign trail, as New Yorkers head for the polls today and Bernie Sanders returns from the Vatican, we'll have highlights of Texas Senator Ted Cruz's visit to San Diego last week, as well as news of Speaker Paul Ryan's decision not to accept the nomination if the GOP convention is contested. Postage stamp prices have just gone down for the first time in almost 100 years. But the post office isn't happy about it, and we'll tell you why. The search for alien life forms in a galaxy far, far away has just received some heavy-duty support from the leader of a major social networking company and a world-famous physicist, and we'll share details on their innovative plans. If you are a nonpartisan voter who wants to vote in California's presidential election on June 7th, we'll have some news you'll want to hear today, since some parties limit who can vote in their primaries, but it's not too late to register and cast your vote. Also be aware that independent is not nonpartisan. In California, independent is a separate and right-leading political party. To vote as a Democrat, for example, you have to be a registered Democrat or a nonpartisan voter, while only Republicans can vote in the Republican primary. On Destination East County, we'll have the most fun festivals and events coming up across our region, from the start of Cajon Classic Cruises season to the Coyote Music Festival and much, much more. Then, from Public News Service, hear the top national news and international news, including an update on that devastating earthquake in Ecuador, a landmark immigration case now before the U.S. Supreme Court, and an update on a discriminatory bill recently passed in North Carolina that's drawing a backlash nationwide. Spring is a great time to hit the trail and bring your dog along. So we'll have some news today about dog-friendly trails in San Diego County for you and your four-legged friends. On Bookshelf, we'll be re-airing our interview with local author Marnie Friedman. Plus, we'll have news about the Democracy Spring protest in Washington, D.C. today that's drawn people from across the nation. We'll have all these stories and more, so stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, where East County matters. A bill now in the state legislature, Assembly Bill 2395, aims to eliminate hardwired landline phones in California communities where cabled fiber optic connections are not available or are too expensive to install. Customers in some rural, mountain, and desert communities would have no choice but to switch to wireless cell phone service if the measure being pushed by AT&T is enacted. There are serious safety concerns with this, since during emergencies, 911 callers' locations cannot easily be verified, unlike calls from landlines, which can be pinpointed instantly. In case of medical emergency or a serious crime in progress or a wildfire, prompt 911 responses are critical. Also, cell phones go dead during power outages once the battery runs out and can't be recharged, while old-fashioned landlines work even when the electricity is off. Donna Tisdale, chair of the Boulevard Community Planning Group in rural East County, voices additional concerns. She says, Some of us living near the U.S.-Mexico border do not have cell service due to rugged terrain and agreements with Mexico not to have cell towers too close to the border. So eliminating landlines would leave border residents in the most remote areas of San Diego County with no phone service at all. Some have also voiced objections over potential health risks from cell phones and wireless, including people diagnosed with sensitivities to electromagnetic radiation. In 2011, the World Health Organization classified radiation from cell phones and wireless devices as a possible carcinogen, while some studies have shown DNA damage and other health issues. AT&T is initiating similar pilot projects in other states to disconnect what it calls legacy systems or landlines to save money. California residents concerned about losing landlines are urged to contact their state legislators and ask that landlines be retained. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Federal Elections Commission is investigating a series of campaign expenditures claimed by Republican Congressman Duncan D. Hunter that appear to violate federal campaign laws. Hunter used campaign funds to pay for video games on 68 separate occasions, totaling over $1,302. He also claimed $1,650 in tuition paid to a private Christian school for his son's education. The House Ethics Committee's website makes clear campaign funds are to be used for bona fide campaign or political purposes only. Campaign funds are not to be used to enhance a member's lifestyle or to pay a member's personal obligations. Members have no discretion whatsoever to convert campaign funds to personal use. The video game deduction included the notation personal expense to be paid back, but to date, no payback is reported. Hunter's representative, Joe Casper, said some unauthorized charges are in dispute, though Hunter has since said he will pay back the debt in full to resolve the issue. But Patrick Malloy, a Democrat challenging Hunter in the upcoming election, calls Hunter's excuses the equivalent of saying, "The dog ate my homework." He says this is the latest among embarrassments caused by the 50s congressional district representative who recently endorsed Donald Trump and smoked e-cigarettes during a congressional hearing in support of a measure to allow vaping on airplanes. "This adolescent behavior is unbecoming for a member of the House of Representatives," says Malloy, a realtor and small business owner in Escondido. The video games include some violent games and titles such as Axes and Acres, Killing Floor 2, and Party Hard. The latter carries added irony since in 2014, Washingtonians' best and worst list named Hunter the number one party animal in Congress. Malloy, who has been endorsed by the Democratic Party and Democratic members of San Diego's congressional delegation, also faults Hunter for calling for deep cuts to Social Security and Medicare, backing tax cuts for the wealthy, and his belief that it is not the national government's responsibility to stimulate jobs. Malloy's campaign theme is reigniting the American dream. That includes supporting Social Security and Medicare, improved veterans care, reduction on student debt, and free tuition for vocational educational students. "This is my vision for a revitalized economy," he states in an editorial in the Escondido Grapevine. "We need to sound a wake-up call to reinvest in American infrastructure, reinforce technology, and channel agricultural innovation to create a strong base for new jobs. In other words, we need to rebuild the middle class." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
San Diego police seek public help to locate a suspect who set a homeless man on fire Sunday morning in a parking lot outside a CVS store near the Rite Aid on Euclid Avenue, just north of Highway 94. According to a witness, the suspect asked for water, then lured the victim into his vehicle, a black Toyota two-door pickup truck with a camper shell, where he threw chemicals on him and set him afire, watching with chilling calm as the man suffered burns so severe that authorities indicate he is not expected to survive. The suspect is described as a Hispanic man, aged 30 to 40, 6 feet tall and weighing about 170 pounds. He wore a red hat, red shirt, and black pants. Authorities have released a sketch of the suspect now showing a beard and mustache. A witness and friend of the victim, Misty Cardenas, told 10 News that she tried to help her friend, but the flames were too hot. She said he was screaming and trying to pull off his clothes while the suspect just watched him burn. She is concerned that the man is going to do it again because, she said, there was nothing there, no emotion. Another friend, Tiffany Rajnis, has said that the victim was a kind person who would give the shirt off his back. He'd do anything he could for you, she told KNSD. The victim's name has not been released by authorities. He was transported to UCSD Medical Center with life-threatening burns to his chest, face, and head. If you have any information on this horrific crime, please contact San Diego Police at 619-531-2293, or you can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. And if you see that vehicle, please call 911. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
Governor Jerry Brown has signed Assembly Bill 908 into law, expanding paid family leave for Californians. The governor says he wants to provide a more decent and empathetic kind of community. The new law, which will take effect in 2018, will require employers to pay 60% of wages to most workers taking family leave, up to a maximum of $1,100 a week. Low-income workers earning $20,000 a year or less will receive 70% of their wages. The measure raises the 55% limit previously established in California's original paid leave law, which allows workers to take off up to 6 weeks from work to care for an ill family member or bond with a new child. The measure passed with overwhelming support from Democrats, but opposition from many Republicans. The California Chamber of Commerce remained neutral since the measure is funded through employee contributions. Among San Diego's Assembly representatives, Democrats Lorena Gonzalez, Tony Atkins, and Shirley Weber voted in favor, while Republicans Brian Jones and Rocky Chavez voted against. President Barack Obama praised the action and urged Congress to support similar protections for workers nationwide. Congress needs to catch up to California and to countries all over the world by acting to guarantee paid family leave to all Americans, the president said. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Mavi Barena.
This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. The County Board of Education's Committee on School District Reorganization has approved the Grossmont Union High School District's proposal to shift to trustee districts, along with the district's proposed map. The redistricting proposal could take effect in time for the November election, but only if the State Board of Education also approves Grossmont's request for a waiver of a public vote. The state has never denied such a waiver before. But due to some special circumstances in the Grossmont District, some community members as well as Supervisor Diane Jacob have written to the state asking that it require a public vote, which would delay implementation of the plan. The county committee held a series of public meetings across East County to hear public input, and it got an earful. Some supported the plan, which will carve out a new district with an open seat in the Lemon Grove and Spring Valley area. Students, teachers, and school principals spoke in favor of having a more representative government through the trustee system and protecting minority voices. The district has said it felt compelled to switch from at-large elections to trustee districts after receiving a letter from an attorney suggesting the district was in violation of state and federal voting rights acts. Some taxpayers voiced support for redistricting to avoid potentially costly litigation, but others voiced concerns, including Iraqi Chaldeans who said their voting bloc would be broken up into multiple districts, weakening their voice through the new plan. The strongest opposition came from Alpine, where residents are suing the Grossmont district because it failed to build an Alpine High School despite two bond measures that Alpine voters approved for that purpose. Trustee Priscilla Schreiber, the only advocate for the Alpine High School left on the board, will lose her seat through redistricting. Alpine will be assigned representation by Jim Kelly, the most vocal opponent of an Alpine High School on the Grossmont board. Alpine also has a unification petition pending before the state, which the County Board of Education has recommended be approved. If the state and ultimately voters approve the unification, then Alpine will leave the Grossmont district entirely and have the neighboring Alpine Union School District expand beyond elementary and middle schools to build its long-promised high school. Many community residents have asked that the redistricting of Grossmont be postponed until after a decision is made on Alpine's unification petition request to leave the district, since that would trigger a need to redistrict yet again, because all trustee districts must be equal in population. If unification is ultimately approved and the Alpine Blossom Valley areas leave the Grossmont district, Then, ironically, Jim Kelly would also lose his seat on the Grossmont board, since his residence is within the boundaries of the area that would be split off.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The California Highway Patrol seeks public help to find a driver who struck a man in dense fog Tuesday night on Interstate 8 near Crestwood Road and left him for dead. The vehicle likely has damage to the right front side. The victim was a 45-year-old motorist from Phoenix who may have been going to the Golden Acorn Casino nearby but ran out of gas. A trucker found the man, injured, lying face down and wearing dark clothing. The victim was able to tell investigators he had been struck by a vehicle but could not provide a description. He was taken by ambulance to a waiting medical helicopter at the Viejas Reservation but died of his injuries while en route. If you have any information on this tragedy, please call the California Highway Patrol at 619-401-2000. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson. Campus police at San Diego State are warning about a flasher who approached female students Tuesday at 11:30 p.m. on the Love Library's fourth floor, pulled down his pants, and exposed his genitals. The victims called police, but the suspect had fled. Police searched the building but could not find him. The victims described the indecent exposure suspect as Hispanic or white male in his early 20s and about 5'6" tall. The suspect had light brown hair and was wearing a salmon-colored short-sleeve shirt with white writing on the front, along with light blue jeans and black shoes. If you have information on this crime, campus police ask that you call 619-594-1991 or email police at mail.sdsu.edu.
The San Diego City Council will be voting on whether to approve two ballot bond measures to fund construction of new fire stations in the city of San Diego. The measure was approved by the Rules Committee Monday. If approved by the council and by voters in November, the initiatives could allocate $205 million to build nearly 20 fire stations in areas where response times are longer than the recommended standard of 7 minutes 30 seconds. Destruction of Rancho Bernardo during the 2007 firestorms was blamed in part on a lack of fire stations in the community, according to a federal hearing chaired by Senator Dianne Feinstein at the time. Many other communities are similarly lacking adequate coverage nearly a decade later. A study found in 2010 that San Diego needs at least 19 more fire stations, of which 10 were deemed critical. Since then, just one of those has been built in Mission Valley. Construction is underway for a second one in Little Italy, and funding has been approved for three more in Black Mountain Ranch, the South Bay, and University City. The other 14 stations might not be built for years, if ever, unless the bond measures are approved. Councilmember Marty Emerald says at the current rate that the city is building new fire stations, just one every 5 years, it would take nearly 100 years to build enough to meet current needs. If the bond measures proposed by Emerald are approved, those stations would all be built within 10 years. The average cost per station, including land acquisition, is $10 million. But winning voter approval will be a challenge, since the measures would raise property taxes and thus require approval by two-thirds of the voters. The tax increase would average about $25 a year per household, which Emerald calls a real value for greater public safety in San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
Next up, we have a special message from the County News Service about being prepared for fire season in the wake of the El Nino rains.
The mild El Nino rains didn't end the drought, but it may have made fire conditions worse. The call goes out today to be prepared. Firefighters say the sporadic rains were enough to cause a lot of new grasses and vegetation to sprout up, adding a lot of fuel to the fire mix. You're reminded to maintain at least 100 feet of defensible space around your home.
Here's what Supervisor Diane Jacob has to say.
We're sending a message to the public. Be prepared. We're facing another very tough fire season, and where we've had rain, then the grasses grow and the brush grows, and it's time to cut those grasses back, to cut that brush back, and provide that at least 100 feet of defensible space around homes and structures.
County Fire Chief Tony Meacham also urged residents to take precautions.
We had rains last week. The grass has about a 6-week growing cycle before it dies, so some of the grasses that started from the rains in January are going to start dying off. We're already seeing brown up out in the desert communities. So we're going to be having fire conditions here probably by the end of the month.
Cal Fire has already beefed up its staff for the fire season. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with some highlights of Texas Senator Ted Cruz's visit to San Diego Monday night. Senator Cruz told a crowd of about 2,000 people in San Diego that California is going to decide the presidential race. Speaking at a Republican meeting at the Town and Country Hotel's Golden Ballroom, Cruz praised California as the birthplace of the Reagan Revolution. Earlier in the day, the senator spoke in Irvine, kicking off his California campaign. Cruz still trails billionaire businessman Donald Trump in delegates, but he has gained momentum after trouncing Trump in the most recent presidential primaries. He is running on a platform of restoring, quote, real conservative values, unquote, if elected. He supports establishment of a flat tax and abolishment of the IRS, cracking down on immigration, including building a border wall, boosting defense spending and defeating Islamic terrorism, banning abortion even in cases of rape, supporting the Second Amendment, including open carry laws, and slashing government regulation, and that includes eliminating the Environmental Protection Agency. In a pre-rally interview with KUSI-TV, he quipped, "If I could have done anything, I'd love to be a Hollywood movie star, but I didn't have the talent or good looks to do that, so I'm stuck being a lawyer." A former litigator who has argued cases before the Supreme Court, he calls himself a strict constitutionalist. He noted that he has won 11 elections in the last 3 weeks, and he says the Republican Party is uniting behind his campaign, adding that 50 California elected officials have thus far endorsed him.
For weeks, speculation has been rampant that Republicans might try to nominate Paul Ryan as a compromise candidate for the presidency if the party has a contested convention, with neither Donald Trump nor Ted Cruz receiving enough delegates for a clear win. But on Tuesday, Ryan held a press conference at the Republican National Committee headquarters to announce unequivocally that he will not be in the running. "Let me be clear, I do not want nor will I accept the nomination of our party," he stated. Ryan previously served as vice presidential nominee in 2012. He will be chairing this year's national convention and emphasized that he believes delegates should be limited to casting votes only for actual candidates. That would limit the choices to Trump, Cruz, or potentially John Kasich, who is running a distant third, if neither of the frontrunners could secure enough votes on a first or subsequent ballot. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
The race to fill the 71st Assembly seat being vacated by Brian Jones due to term limits in East County has narrowed to two candidates, both Republicans, Santee Mayor Randy Vopel and business owner Tony Tiora. Jewelry store owner Leo Hamill, also a Republican, announced last week that he is dropping out of the race, although his announcement comes too late to keep his name off the ballot. Registrar Michael Vu has informed us that there will be a top two runoff race in November, even though there are only two names now on the June primary ballot. Another prominent Republican contender, Michael Harrison, deputy chief of staff to Congressman Duncan Hunter, campaigned for months but decided to drop out shortly before the filing deadline to focus on his work in Washington. Democrat Gerald Larkey had announced his intent to run but was hospitalized for a medical issue and missed the filing deadline for signatures, leaving Democrats with no candidate in the race. Bonnie Price with the East County Democratic Club said the top two primary system discourages parties from running multiple candidates since this dilutes the vote. But relying on a single candidate in a primary raises the risk of having nobody on the ballot if anything happens to the sole candidate from a party. In the past, before the voter-approved top two primary shift, every political party was entitled to hold its own primaries and be assured of having a candidate on the November ballot. The new system can result in voters having a choice of candidates from only a single party in the November general elections. Price suggested the system should be changed to assure fairness for all political parties and voters across the political spectrum. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Here's the good news. The price of your postage stamps has gone down. The bad news, there may be steeper rate hikes in the future, according to CNN. The United States Postal Service is not happy that the price of stamps decreased from 49 cents to 47 cents on Sunday, because it will cost them $2 billion this year, according to the Postal Regulatory Commission. Less revenue makes it more difficult for the Postal Service to provide the services that Americans require from it, such as mailing letters and packages at a time when recent budget cuts by Congress, forced closure of some post offices, and removal of public mailboxes in many communities. To counteract the rate change, the USPS is asking for a change in its rate changing process that could allow it to charge steeper rate hikes in the future. Postmaster General Megan Brennan issued a statement Thursday which reads, "Given our precarious financial condition and ongoing business needs, the price reduction exacerbates our losses. This unfortunate decision heightens the importance of the review of our rate-making system." The last time there was a decrease in the price of postage stamps was in July of 1919, when the price went from 3 cents to 2 cents. This is only the third price decrease going back to the Civil War. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alpert.
Is there life in a galaxy far, far away? Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and famous physicist Stephen Hawking believe it is possible. So they're teaming up with Russian billionaire Yuri Milner to develop and launch a fleet of miniature spacecraft each the size of a postage stamp to explore the universe in search of alien life forms. The project is called Breakthrough Starshot, a $100 million philanthropic venture. The program will be led by Pete Warden, former NASA Ames Research Center director, with a team of world-class scientists and engineers. Thousands of nanocrafts will be powered by sails, pushed by light beams on a journey to Alpha Centauri, the nearest star system to Earth. Once launched in the next few years, the 25-trillion-mile voyage will take about 20 years to complete, plus another 4 years to transmit the data back to scientists here on Earth. In a statement, Hawking says, quote, "Earth is a wonderful place, but it might not last forever." The stellar physicist concludes, "Sooner or later, we must look to the stars. Breakthrough Starshot is a very exciting first step on that journey." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. If you are registered as a nonpartisan voter and received a vote by mail ballot, but you want to vote for president in the June primary, the Registrar of Voters needs to hear from you. Nonpartisan ballots won't list any presidential candidates, so if you'd like to cast a vote for president, the registrar needs to send you a different mail ballot. The Registrar of Voters Office sent out over 300,000 postcards to nonpartisan vote-by-mail voters in early March to let them know they have choices if they want to vote for president. They can request a mail ballot for one of three political parties, American Independent, Democratic, or Libertarian. Those parties are allowing nonpartisan voters to take part in their elections. Selecting one of those political party ballots will not permanently change your party registration, but will allow you to vote for the presidential candidate of any one of those parties for the June 7th presidential primary election. Choose which of these party ballots you'd like to receive for the primary on the postage-paid postcard and return it by April 13th. And if you can't find that postcard, you can call the registrar's office at area code 858-565-5800. Now, if you want to vote for a presidential candidate in the Green, Republican, or Peace and Freedom Party, you'll need to re-register with that party before May 23rd, because they allow only registered members of their parties to take part in their presidential primary elections. You can re-register to vote online at registertovote.ca.gov. If your signature is confirmed through Department of Motor Vehicles records, it will automatically be sent to the Registrar of Voters office. If the signature is not confirmed, print the form, sign it, and mail it to the registrar, or you can drop it off in person at the registrar's office in Kearny Mesa. By state law, the registrar must have your original signature. For more information, you can call 858-565-5800, or you can visit sdvote.com.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. The East County Magazine show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes the launch of the Cajon Classic Cruises summer season, Lakeside's Western Days Parade, and the Spring Garden Festival at Cuyamaca College.
Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including an Arbor Day celebration, the Coyote Music Festival, and much more.
The Cajon Classic Cruises season will rev to life starting April 20th in downtown El Cajon. This annual family-friendly event will take place each Wednesday evening from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. along Main Street near Magnolia. You can watch for announcements of each week's theme as well as information on restaurants and more at downtownelcajon.com.
Chaldean Nights at Sequan will be held on April 21st from 8 p.m. till 9:30 p.m. Usama Zakaria and Sammy Shamsi headline a night of music and dancing with the Nisau Band, DJ Matthews, and belly dancer Tarshiana. You can get more information or tickets at sequan.com.
Lakeside's Western Days Parade will roll out on Saturday, April 23rd at 9:35 in the morning down Main Street in downtown Lakeside. Now in its 51st year, this year's parade, hosted by the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce, will feature the theme America is Strong, Lakeside Strong. The parade features equestrians, floats, marching bands, and more.
The Spring Garden Festival at Cuyamaca College, in its 23rd year, is a family-friendly community celebration of spring and a greener future that attracts more than 3,000 visitors annually. This year's event, set for 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, April 23rd, features fun programs, exhibitors, and demonstrations that will help you become a better gardener and learn how to conserve our precious resources. Some festival highlights: the renowned Cuyamaca College Ornamental Horticulture Department will be holding its biggest plant sale of the year. Faculty and students in the Ornamental Horticulture Department will be presenting information on a wide variety of topics and answer questions. There will also be children's activities and exhibits, info on garden clubs, and prize drawings. For details, visit cuyamaca.edu.
The Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation presents an exhibition featuring an award-winning plein air artist, Marilyn Hallam, on display from April 23rd through May 20th at the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center. A reception honoring the artist will be held on Sunday, April 24th from 1 to 4 p.m., and the public is invited. For details, you can visit the Mission Trails Regional Park website at mtrp.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Danny Green Trio, a critically acclaimed traditional and modern jazz group, will perform at the Cuyamaca College Performing Arts Center on Thursday, April 28th at 7:30 p.m. The trio has won a San Diego Music Award for Best Jazz Album. The performance is all part of the Spring Concert Series at Cuyamaca College. For tickets, you can visit cuyamacacollege.edu.
The City of El Cajon invites the public to an Arbor Day celebration on Saturday, April 30th at 8 a.m. in Hillside Park. The city will be giving away tree seedlings and light refreshments as they commemorate the city's 18th year of receiving the Tree City USA Award.
The Coyote Music Festival returns to Cuyamaca College on Saturday, May 7th, starting at 12 noon at Cuyamaca College on the Grand Lawn in Rancho San Diego. Now in its 8th year, the entirely student-run festival provides the community with an afternoon of live outdoor music. The festival also culminates a semester worth of work for students studying music, technology, recording, and business. For details on this event, you can visit cuyamaca.edu.
On Saturday, May 7th, from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., you can join a hike to discover the historical flume built in the late 1800s to bring water from the Cuyamaca Mountains to the city of San Diego. Hikers at El Monte Park will learn about the fauna and flora of Blossom Valley Hill, view a tunnel that was built in the late 1800s, and enjoy gorgeous views of El Monte Valley. The hike begins with a strenuous quarter-of-a-mile uphill switchback section before hitting the historical flume trail, and the remaining trail is easy to moderate. You can meet the ranger at the staging area parking lot across the street from El Monte Park. Wear appropriate hiking shoes, sun protection, and bring water. Inclement weather will cancel this event.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County Show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, April 18th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Today's news highlights a variety of stories, including people still believed to be trapped after an earthquake in Ecuador. The Supreme Court immigration case opens amid protests, and new legislation in North Carolina feared to be putting more people at risk of sexual assault. Leading our news, the death toll from Ecuador's biggest earthquake in decades soared to at least 246 on Sunday as rescuers searched for survivors in shattered coastal towns. The 7.8 magnitude quake struck off the Pacific coast Saturday and was felt around the nation. At least 2,500 people were injured in the latest tally. Back here in the U.S., the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments today, challenging the Obama administration's program that allows undocumented immigrants to live and work in the U.S. without fear of deportation. And thousands of immigrants are just outside for a Fight for Families rally. Andrea Sears has more.
The gathering includes members of Congress, community, civil rights, and labor leaders. Luba Cortez with Make the Road New York says they're asking the court to uphold President Barack Obama's executive action that would protect 4 million undocumented immigrants from deportation and allow them to legally hold jobs.
Our people are still being put in detention centers for really minor offenses. So we really need something like this executive action to be able to end the pain for our families.
26 states challenged the executive action in court, claiming the president had exceeded his authority, and the lower federal courts have agreed.
Also in the nation's capital today, massive eight-day democracy spring protests are wrapping up.
Close to 1,000 people have been arrested during the sit-ins, where activists railed against corruption and the influence of money in politics. Specifically, they denounced the 2010 Citizens United Supreme Court decision that declared that corporations have the same legal rights as people, which led to an explosion of super PACs and dark money. Democracy Spring campaign director Peter James Callahan says the movement started 2 years ago with a march for democracy from L.A. to Sacramento.
After that, they had 2 weeks of nonviolent sit-ins at the California Capitol, which resulted in two out of their three bills being passed.
The March for Democracy protests convinced California legislators to call for a state constitutional convention to pass an amendment to overturn Citizens United. And in January, the state assembly passed AB 700, the Disclose Act, which forces more transparency in political advertising. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Ted Cruz on Saturday won all 14 delegates in the Wyoming GOP convention, a relatively small number, but enough for the Texas senator to declare victory and keep GOP presidential frontrunner Donald Trump from securing the nomination. Tomorrow, Democratic and Republican voters across New York head to the polls. A Quinnipiac poll released last week shows Hillary Clinton leading Bernie Sanders by a 53-40% margin statewide, and a CBS News survey shows Donald Trump leading the Republican field by 33 percentage points. Now to North Carolina, where the executive order issued by Governor Pat McCrory last week intended to address concerns over the controversial HB 2 legislation did little to allay the concerns of survivors of sexual assault. Stephanie Carson has more on the issue from a victim's perspective.
Andrea Pino, a former student at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, was raped by a fellow student in 2012. She feels the legislation places more people at risk of assault. Governor McCrory's executive order last week restored the right to sue for discrimination, but the law still prevents transgender people from using the bathroom of the gender they identify with and prevents cities from creating non-discrimination ordinances. Pino explains her issue with HB 2.
North Carolina is stepping farther and farther behind when it comes to any type of issues around equality. It's a very unsafe time right now in North Carolina. It's very unfortunate that the current government is using their bigotry in its disguise as a way to prevent violence.
Pino is the co-author of We Believe You, a book chronicling the issue of sexual assault on college campuses.
The national spotlight on Flint may have dimmed, but the city's water crisis is far from over. And that's why social workers in Michigan are continuing their boots-on-the-ground work to assist residents. Director of Public Policy with NASW Michigan, Alan Walkendorfer, says despite the efforts of many volunteers, there are people who are unaware of how they can ensure the water in their home is safe for use.
There's a lot of folks doing a lot of great work, but for whatever reason, people are getting missed. And so that's our goal. Find a way to get to those folks and help them and get them the help they need.
Social workers through the coordination of disaster relief group Crossing Water are making home visits to provide filter installations, education, water, and to connect Flint residents to other needed services. Wildlife protection groups are backing a bill that would ban the trapping of bobcats and the sale of their pelts in Illinois. We get more from Brandon Campbell.
Last year, state lawmakers gave the okay to allow sport hunting of bobcats for the first time in nearly 40 years. Mark Ayers, state director of the Humane Society of the United States, says the state hasn't done a good job of tracking the bobcat population and that traps could pose a problem.
The problem is that trapping is indiscriminate. You know, we don't want to see these cats put back onto the state's threatened species list by the same things that led to their demise in the first place.
The bill, SB 2143, does not ban all bobcat hunting. Rather, it would only prohibit the use of traps and make selling and buying their pelts illegal.
Parts of the Northeast are going to get rather noisy this spring as hordes of cicadas are expected to emerge after spending 17 years underground. Scientists say billions of the critters will make themselves heard in Maryland, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and West Virginia once the soil where they live warms up to 65 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Spring is a beautiful time to hit the trail and bring your dog along. The good news is that dogs are allowed at all county parks except Agua Caliente and Wilderness Gardens Preserve. Assistants or guide dogs are always welcome at all parks as long as they are in compliance with the regulations and check in with the park staff. Here are some tips to make your hike enjoyable and safe for both you and your dog. First, plan out your hike. Know your dog's fitness level so you can match that with the length of trail and type of terrain you choose. You can check out trails online at the County Parks and Recreation Department. Second, be sure your dog is up to date on vaccines and have a collar or been treated to prevent ticks and fleas. Also, make sure your four-legged friend has current ID tags and a well-fitted collar in case you get separated. If your dog does become lost, contact the County of San Diego Department of Animal Services. Make sure the time of day you choose to hike with your dog is appropriate, avoiding hot temperatures. Unless you hike with your dog often and they are used to this type of rigorous exercise, they could succumb to heat exhaustion. Dogs are more susceptible to heat stroke than humans. Also, if the ground is too hot for your hand, it's too hot for your dog's paws. Always have plenty of water for both you and your dog. It's better to bring along a little extra than not enough. You might also want to pack a few doggy treats and search for a shaded area to take your breaks. Be sure to stay on the marked trail. In all county parks, dogs are required to be kept on a leash no longer than 6 feet in length at all times. A leash prevents dogs from becoming lost and also helps protect them from having an unexpected encounter with a rattlesnake, mountain lion, a sick or injured animal. Make sure to maintain control of your dog at all times. Dogs that are out of control or that pose a demonstrated risk to others may be asked to leave by a park ranger. Always clean up after your dog to allow everyone to enjoy our parks. If you decide to make it a weekend or an overnight in a county park with camping, the fee for dogs in camping parks is just $1 per dog per night. You will need to provide current license and vaccination information as well. Hiking with your dog in a county park is a great way to get some exercise and enjoy a change of pace from your usual walks around the neighborhood. So follow these tips, enjoy your hike, and get plenty of bonding time with your pup. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing award-winning writer Marnie Friedman. My guest wears many hats in the field of literary arts. She is a playwright, screenwriter, ghostwriter, magazine writer, blogger, and workshop teacher. Welcome, Marnie. It's a pleasure having you here in the studio with me.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Let's start with your experience writing plays and films. I know that Playing with Mona Lisa was made into a Disney film. Tell us a little about that journey from the USC School of Filmic Writing to seeing an actual movie made of your work.
Well, it's a very complicated and messy process. But basically, it was made into a play in Los Angeles, and that received some pretty good reviews. And it was based on a period in my life where I was dumped, and I was just looking at how funny it was, how down in the dumps I was, and I started to write about that and what it's like to be a young writer in Los Angeles, which is just kind of getting swallowed up in the sea of muck,
right,
for lack of a better word. And piece by piece, we decided we would put it together and try to do it ourselves. And then one thing led to another. It sounds so much smoother saying it like this, but it took years of insane tenacity for it to finally meet its home, which it ended up that Disney took it on. And we got some wonderful actors. We got Elliot Gould and Marlo Thomas.
Wow.
And Johnny Galecki and just Harvey Fierstein, some people that I really admired and loved. And it was amazing to watch it come out.
And so how did you keep yourself going through, you said it took years. What kept you motivated, inspired?
I have this thing where, do you know that machine where you get bopped down and you keep popping back up? The
right.
Whack-a-mole, that's what
right.
it is. I kind of liken myself to a whack-a-mole. Like, I just keep popping back up somehow.
That's a good trait.
I think that's kind of what you need to do,
uh-huh.
Especially when you find a piece that you really love that says something that you really want to say, then you have that belief inside of you that it's worth sticking out through all the crap that you have to go through.
Wow, it sounds like you have the right attitude. You've also worked as a script doctor for Fox Searchlight, Disney, and other film companies, and you've worked as a script agent for the Mary Sue Seymour Agency. What's it like being a script or book doctor as opposed to just focusing on your work, your something that you love?
Well, it kind of goes back to your last question. That's one of the ways that I survived was, you know, I discovered that I was able to help other people. I figured out I was very resistant to plot for quite a long time.
Mm.
And once I embraced that you actually needed structure, I was able to help other writers with their structure. And I was also a dialogue specialist. It was just one of the weird things that came to me. So that was one of the ways that I was able to make a living. But it also, it was like an honor to help other writers mm-hmm. try to tell their stories. It was the beginning, I think, of what I do now as a writing coach.
Right. So that leads to my next question, which is about ghostwriting. It's an interesting term. It means the person in the spotlight is someone else writing while you, the ghost, is hidden in the background. Well, no, you're doing the writing, and the other person has the spotlight, excuse
yeah.
me. So how has that affected your work, being the ghost in the background? Has that added to your tool of skills in writing and teaching?
Yes, and it stinks. I mean, I was writing for a series of how-to books, and the first time, I'd never done it before, and someone offered me the job, and I said, sure. And then looking at the book that's in the bookshelf, and you see the guy wrote, why I wrote this book. And it was the most frustrating thing, because
right.
it was like, you didn't write the book, dude.
Exactly.
So it has an element of being stinky. So I try not to do that. But if it's someone that really has an important story to tell and they just don't have that as their skill set, then it's, again, it becomes an honor to help that come to fruition.
I see. Then you become that person's voice.
Yes. You know what? The word voice, I think, is so much about what I'm supposed to do on the planet. I know that might sound kind of weird, but helping people to find their voice. So when I'm ghostwriting and it's actually allowing them to say something that they really want to say, like I'm working on somebody's mm-hmm. memoir right now,
mm-hmm.
There's something incredibly inspiring about helping them to get, you know, to do something they wouldn't be able to do and
right.
put a message out there.
Okay. I know that you teach writing workshops at San Diego Writers, Inc. in the UCSD Extension and that you run three popular writing groups, the San Diego Screenwriters Group, the Monthly Memoir Club, and the North County Writers Circle. You're also a therapist for writers and artists. We know we need therapists. In your opinion, how does teaching really make a difference? I mean, not just to your students, but the writing community, like running these groups, how does that add to the community?
Well, I kind of have a passion for, when I first came out to San Diego, I realized we were all really separate. And, you know, sometimes in San Diego, it's very hard to be connected. And I started the San Diego Writers Network newsletter because I was traveling all around the county to, you know, from one group to the other, workshop to the other, but everyone feels very alone.
Right.
Often writers feel very alone. And there's something really magical that happens when a group comes together and they really want success for each other, something very nurturing. And it's wonderful to be able to facilitate that for people. And then just having the training as a therapist, a lot of times, like in my monthly memoir group, that's the first Saturday at Writers Inc. Of the month. It helps with, you know, because sometimes with memoirists, they're traveling to really hard places. Mm-hmm. And so the therapeutic training kind of helps them to be safe and to actually go there and get their material out in a safe environment.
It seems like a really good marriage, if you will, the therapy and the...
It's weird. I didn't plan it. Mm-hmm. I feel like I kind of fell backwards into it, but it feels very much like what I was always supposed to be doing. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but when you feel like you're really in the right place at the right time. And right. I finally feel like that. I was like, I was almost in the right place, almost in the right place. And now...
You're in the right place.
Yeah.
And so I hear that San Diego Writers, Inc. is having some events in October.
They have a conference, actually. It starts on the 25th of October, and it runs to the 27th. And it's fairly inexpensive. It's a great way to get introduced into the community of San Diego Writers, Inc. On the 27th, I will be teaching a class in characterization. And another wonderful event that's coming up this in October, the 25th to the 27th, is San Diego Writers Circle is going to be performing their first annual one-act plays. And that's in conjunction with the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival. And that's at the Digital Gym in North Park. And that would be the 27th and the 28th at 7 p.m. So if you want to either come learn about craft or you want to support local artists, a couple of really awesome things are going on this weekend.
So the names of those two events are?
The San Diego Writers, Inc. Fall for Writing Conference. Mm-hmm. So if you Google San Diego Writers, Inc., it'll pop up. And,
right.
It's nine classes you can take for something like $100, mm-hmm. and from top-notch instructors. And then the other one is called Darkness Unwound, and that's the series of spooky one acts that's at the Digital Gym.
Okay, well, good information out there. One last question: you're now busy editing your first online literary journal, The Literary Vine, nice name.
Thanks.
And finishing your first book, The 7 Essential Writing Tools. Where can we find this journal, and when will your book become available?
The book should become available in January, if all goes well, but nothing has gone exactly according to plan.
Of course.
I've had to learn to a lot of patience throughout this whole process. And if you go to my website, www.thewriterinyou.org, it'll... Hopefully we'll be announcing when that is coming out. And the literary journal we're kind of taking a slow track, meaning the best material. So we're just accumulating, for the Literary Vine, we're accumulating some amazing material. So we kind of want to keep the call out there. So if there's any people that write short stories or, you know, even excerpts from books that want to submit, we're happy to look at those as well.
Oh, keeping an eye out for those things.
Yeah.
Well, Marnie, our time is up, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being here.
For more information on Marnie Friedman and her work, please visit her website, again, at www.thewriterinyou.org. This is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
California has a long history of setting political trends and actually gave birth to the massive 8-day Democracy Spring protests that are wrapping up in Washington, D.C. today. Close to 1,000 people have been arrested during the sit-ins, where activists railed against corruption and the influence of money in politics. Specifically, they denounced the 2010 Citizens United Supreme Court decision that declared that corporations have the same legal rights as people, which led to an explosion of super PACs and dark money. Democracy Spring Communications Director Peter James Callahan says the movement started 2 years ago with a march for democracy from L.A. to Sacramento.
After that, they had 2 weeks of nonviolent sit-ins at the California Capitol, which resulted in 2 out of their 3 bills being passed.
The March for Democracy protests convinced California legislators to call for a state constitutional convention to pass an amendment to overturn Citizens United. And in January, the state assembly passed AB 700, the Disclose Act, which forces more transparency in political advertising. Kai Newkirk co-founded the advocacy group 99 Rise in Los Angeles and is now the campaign manager for Democracy Spring. He says even though Congress is controlled by Republicans who don't support progressive goals, the Democracy Spring movement has still made its point.
Because we're going to lift this issue up in a way that creates a political price for anyone who defends the status quo of corruption and refuses to stand with the people and push for reform to save our democracy.
Many of Democracy Spring's member groups are based in California, including the Courage Campaign, which works on progressive causes in the Golden State. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. If you are registered as a nonpartisan voter and received a vote-by-mail ballot, but you want to vote for president in the June primary, the Registrar of Voters needs to hear from you. Nonpartisan ballots won't list any presidential candidates, so if you'd like to cast a vote for president, the Registrar needs to send you a different mail ballot. The Registrar of Voters office sent out over 300,000 postcards to nonpartisan vote-by-mail voters in early March to let them know they have choices if they want to vote for president. They can request a mail ballot for one of three political parties, American Independent, Democratic, or Libertarian. Those parties are allowing nonpartisan voters to take part in their elections. Selecting one of those political party ballots will not permanently change your party registration, but will allow you to vote for the presidential candidate of any one of those parties for the June 7th presidential primary election. Choose which of these party ballots you'd like to receive for the primary on the postage-paid postcard and return it by April 13th. And if you can't find that postcard, you can call the Registrar's Office at area code 858-565-5800. Now, if you want to vote for a presidential candidate in the Green, Republican, or Peace and Freedom Party, you'll need to re-register with that party before May 23rd. Because they allow only registered members of their parties to take part in their presidential primary elections. You can re-register to vote online at registertovote.ca.gov. If your signature is confirmed through Department of Motor Vehicles records, it will automatically be sent to the Registrar of Voters office. If the signature is not confirmed, print the form, sign it, and mail it to the registrar, or you can drop it off in person at the registrar's office in Kearny Mesa. By state law, the registrar must have your original signature. For more information, you can call 858-565-5800, or you can visit sdvote.com.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, A.K. Jules, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.